He's Braden Gall. I'm Jason Fitz. Julian Council producing. We've been breaking down the Vince Young article all morning. Again, I cannot stress this enough. Don't read a headline. Read the article because the article does a great job of bouncing back and forth and giving you both sides. And it took both of us on sort of a turn of emotion to say it as simply as possible. One second you feel like you understand him, the next second you don't.
And talking about Vince Young.
Talking about Vince Young, right. So it feels like the writer of the article also echoed some of those sentiments, and now we get to talk to him. So we'll know directly. Greg Bishop, senior writer for Sports Illustrated. First and foremost, Greg, great job on the article.
Thank you for having me, and I appreciate you saying that. I particularly agree with the last part. You know, I've been inundated the last couple of days here with what he said about Fitzpatrick and some of the more headline-grabbing things that Vince said to me over the course of our time together. But I agree with both of you that I think it's a lot more nuanced than that. I appreciate you saying that.
No, I think it's a tragic Shakespearean-style character, and we obviously are very close to it here in Nashville. But my first question is sort of, tell everybody how this came about, why this was interesting to you, and how this whole ball got rolling, and how you ended up with such a long piece of sort of investigative journalism on a character level.
Yeah, no, I appreciate that. So I've known Lee Steinberg for a long time. He was Vince's agent as of about February. You know, I talked in the piece a little bit about how they met at the Super Bowl and had this four-hour meeting where they're both going over all the missteps of their life and really, you know, bearing their souls to each other. So initially, Lee Steinberg had reached out to me. I was obviously pretty interested in Vince as a character. And from there, it was just a matter of, you know, getting him to kind of understand my process. I write maybe 15 to 20 stories a year. They're mostly longer pieces like this for the magazine. And, you know, a big part of that is getting the guy up front to understand that he's going to have to spend some time with you, that there are going to be, you know, a lot of questions asked, that I'm going to want to talk to his mom and Bo and his brothers and his sisters. And so that I've kind of unfolded that way. You know, initially Vince was a little bit hesitant, but he started coming around. He sent me a ton of numbers. He was really open with his life, and he told his friends and family to be too. And he said the whole time that what he really wanted was for the real story to come out, whatever that may be. And I'm not sure what he thought of the piece yesterday. We haven't spoken other than a few text messages, so I'm not really sure how he thought that came out. But I feel like this is the real piece, the good, the bad, you know, all of it wrapped into one place.
We're talking to Sports Illustrated's Greg Bishop. Again, fantastic article on Vince Young. So let me get into this a little bit, because obviously something was failed from the moment he got to the Titans. So his relationship with Jeff Fisher being what you explored a little bit there, do you think that was just simply a fact where Jeff didn't want him as the quarterback and was forced to take him by Bud Adams? Is that relationship different if Jeff had him at the top of his quarterback list?
I do think it would have been different. I think a lot of people close to Vince thought that, you know, that was sort of the turning point in his career. The moment everything went wrong is when he was drafted to a Titans team that didn't really want him. The coaching staff preferred Matt Leinart. They preferred Jay Cutler. And they end up getting Vince because the owner says that they have to draft him. And so, you know, I don't think it was all a matter of Fisher not wanting Vince to be his quarterback. I think part of it, you know, Norm Chow talks in the story about how Vince was immature, about how he'd show up to meetings and he'd not be in a good mood. You know, I think that if you don't want a guy and then he shows up and he's not doing what you want him to do, he doesn't have the attitude you want him to have. And even though you're winning games together, you're sort of bothered by, you know, sort of the actions as well. So I think all those things kind of twin together to make it so that the relationship, which started off on the wrong note, continued to deteriorate. And then, you know, it becomes just something that, once you throw in these things that Vince talked about in the story, the suicide incident, the walking off the field, it becomes something at that point that's just untenable. And so, you know, you can kind of see the step-by-step breakdown there. But I do think it was unique in pro sports in that you have this, you know, this coach that was widely respected at that time and this quarterback who was coming off the best game in college football history. And over the course of a few seasons, their relationship spectacularly unraveled.
I think one of the most fascinating parts of this is the internal dialogue within Vince Young himself. And obviously we can just judge by what we read and what we hear and what you've given us, but you were there and you've talked with him. Is this maturation process still an ongoing thing, or is this sort of, I'm going to be accountable and then blame everybody else? Is that just something he's never going to grow out of? How does that internal conflict get resolved for him?
Yeah, that's a great question. And to me, that was really the hardest part of writing the story, because I felt that from him. You know, I think he knew what he was supposed to say to me. I knew what he wanted to convey. And that was that he'd moved on and he had forgiven Fisher, and he had this sort of new life that was all, you know, moving in the right direction. And well, a lot of that is true. You could tell when you pressed him, especially when we talked about what happened in Tennessee, or when we talked about what happened with his finances. You could tell that the more you spoke to him, that he still had some lingering bitterness, and he felt like people in his life had really done him wrong. In a lot of ways, he was correct there. You know, his uncle, his financial advisor, his coaches—they did do him wrong, and he also did himself wrong. And so, what I've sort of felt the more time I spent around him was that he was taking responsibility and he was assigning blame. And the whole reason that he went to Canada, that he wanted to play football again, was to try to kind of like close the gap, to try to make it so he could kind of understand what happened to him better. And I think part of putting his life in order was that as well, just being able to kind of sort through, like, at the ultimate end of the day, like, these things are things he personally could have avoided, and how much responsibility should he take for that, and how much should he assign elsewhere. And so I don't know ultimately when he'll reach a point when he feels comfortable, you know, with what happened, but I did get the sense, like, over and over again, that he was trying to work through it, and that may be a lifelong process here for him.
Greg, I want to kind of dive into that a little bit, because as much as we look at the Tennessee era, he, like every player in the NFL, had opportunities to sort of refresh and restart. Why was he not able, in your mind, to maximize any of the opportunities that came to him after he left Nashville?
You know, I think he was just, he would say, I think a big part of what he thinks he didn't make it on the Browns or with the Bills or with the Packers is that he had this financial cloud kind of following him by then. You know, at that point he was being sued. He had declared bankruptcy ultimately, and they were coming after many things, including his, you know, trophies, cars, house, et cetera. And so he had this moment with Ted Thompson that's in the story where the Packers general manager went to him and said, essentially, that, you know, he needed to clean all that stuff up if he wanted to play football. And for Vince, it kind of crystallized then that he felt like Thompson was saying he needed to get his finances in order. He needed to be on a team that wasn't being harassed by his creditors in order to even have a chance to make a team. So, you know, I think that's probably a simplistic viewpoint. It probably had as much to do with you know, his skills at that point, but he never really had a long look in any of those places, and he thinks the reason he didn't have a long look is because of his financial situation. So that would be sort of his reasoning behind it. And the scouts and GMs that I talked to, they basically, you know, said that there was a headache there and that it did impact him, but that a lot of them wanted to fix his motion or correct the hitch, and they just weren't able to.
Greg, obviously prognosticating about someone's mental state and growth and maturation process is dangerous, but 25 years from now, when this all is said, it sounds like there are a lot of positives about how Vince Young has developed and grown up and matured. Do you think that continues, and the end of this story, the last chapter, is a positive one in 15 or 20 years?
I do. You know, I think what I would look at there is the amount of growth that Vince has made in the last 3 years alone. You know, in those 3 years, he cleared up his financial debts. He started or partnered in 3 different businesses. He's got a few different jobs, including one in Texas, one broadcasting. You know, he went back and got his degree. I just think that you've seen the level of growth there and the level of work involved. And, well, I don't think he's as over what happened to him as he thinks he is or as he wants to be. I do think that he's moved in a very positive direction in the last 3 years. And I do think that, you know, that will continue. So I don't know if it'll be a great football ending. You know, I end the story with him saying he's not closing the door and trying to come back. But obviously that's a long shot, I think, at best. And so I think that the key for him and for most people as you get older is just working through, you know, everything that happened to you and trying to figure out how you kind of move forward from there. So in that regard, I think that Vince has done a lot of good work already, and I think that we'll continue to see that as he gets older.
Greg, I know we want to ask you about this year's Titans team. We'll do that in a second. There's one other thing I have to ask you about in the article that really it sort of stood out to me. Sort of out of left field, I thought he made an interesting comparison that Tiger Woods would be the only person that really understands his life struggles. Did that surprise you? Did you get context on that to sort of make that make sense to you?
Yeah, no, it definitely surprised me. It was something that I kind of had on my list to ask him, because when I went up there, that was the day that the arrest had happened, and nobody really knew, what had happened with Tiger yet, but everybody was talking about it. And it reminded me of a piece I had read when I was researching Vince that kind of compared his career to Tiger and how they'd kind of blown up at the same time, and they'd had some troubles at the same time, and now they were both, you know, trying to make it in the sport that had made them famous. And so I thought it was interesting that he brought it up himself. And I thought it was really interesting that he really kind of blamed the media for Tiger's troubles rather than Tiger himself. And I think part of that is just him sympathizing with what it's like to be caught in sort of that tsunami of fame, that the TMZ news cycle. And he just kind of went really into depth on how watching Tiger suffer, watching people make fun of him, watching people lay out how many Uber rides he could have taken if he didn't drive that night, that it reminded him of what happened when he got a DWI. It reminded him of what happened when he got in trouble in Tennessee. It just, to me, was a really interesting comparison, because I did kind of see some of the parallels there, and I did understand what he was saying. And, for him to come out and say that right away, I think was pretty eye-opening and illuminating, that's who ultimately Vince chose to identify with.
So, Greg, we'll go from the Titans of old to the Titans anew, because you wrote a great little guest spot on Monday Morning Quarterback that had some positive things to say about this year's Titans. Where are you on them, and what do you sort of see as the ceiling?
I like this team a lot, and in fact, I think they're a playoff team this year. I think they reconfigured on offense in a way that makes them dangerous. I think a lot of my belief in the Titans stems from my belief in Marcus Mariota. I did a piece on him right when he won the Heisman. I just found him to be a pretty interesting guy with a lot of character, I think, at the quarterback position. So then you throw in Eric Decker, you throw in Corey Davis, you throw in, the targets they already had, like Delonte Walker. And I think that team competes in their division, and I like them in the playoffs and maybe even with a win or two. I think they're really moving in the right direction.
Can you make any comparison today with Marcus Mariota? I think we kind of look at this sometimes. We always want to look back and look forward. And since you just did the article on Vince, and you're talking about sort of this year's Titans, can you make any comparison just on the field and what they're capable of and how special they can be as quarterbacks between the two quarterbacks?
Yeah, Mariota is a tough one with, I like the way he throws a lot. I guess his actual ball reminds me a little bit of like a Steve McNair. I think he's got great presence on the field, similar to what we talk about the greater quarterbacks in the league, guys like Rodgers and Tom Brady. And then I think, what he really needed most was just a lot of options, and now he's got that. So I would say that I like them offensively as a team that potentially could be one of the best in the league in a year or two, and I think they'll compete right away this year.
It's fantastic stuff, man. I can't say enough good things about the article. We loved it. We'll keep telling everybody to read it. Go out and follow him on Twitter, @GregBishopSI. Greg, thanks for your time this morning.
Great work, man.
Thanks for having me, guys. I really appreciate it.
Great stuff from Greg. Again, read the whole article, but we'll continue the conversation, because I think people need to understand that the era we're in now is not the era that Vince Young was in.
Already having questions on Twitter from
the Titans are a much different team. We'll break that down. We'll do that next. Braden and Fitz, ESPN 102.5 The Game.